Charlotte saw several nights of protests after the shooting, some that were peaceful, some that weren't. One of the protesters we saw a lot that week was Braxton Winston. The image of him standing in front of police in riot gear went viral in the days after the Keith Scott shooting. But that was just the beginning for Winston, who has turned from protester to activist and now to candidate for city council. WFAE's David Borax talked to Braxton Winston about his evolution over the past year, beginning with the afternoon Keith Lamont Scott was shot. Friends messaged him that there had been a police shooting on Old Concord Road, which was on his way home from a football coaching job.
While I've never been involved in protests, I like to think of myself as engaged, as aware of my political surroundings and the current events. I've never really passed up a conversation before that, but it was in my personal life. So I decided, hey, you know, I grew up in New York City. I've seen a lot and dealt with a lot of social issues, especially regarding police and the community. But something like this, a police killing of a man, hadn't really happened so close in vicinity and so close in time to me before. So being that it was literally on my way home from work, I felt compelled to go and bear witness to the scene. And so I started live streaming, first time I'd ever done that, as I walked around to show people what was happening at the crime scene, how the investigation was going. I actually had to work that night. I had a loadout. I'm a stagehand. And my mother was in town, and I was going to go home, and she was supposed to leave the next day. And I was going to go home and see her and get ready to go back to work when a voice came over my left shoulder. And it was where they were taking Keith Lamont Scott's SUV out on a flatbed. And the voice, I'll never forget it. It was loud. It was high-pitched. Sounded like it was a young woman, late teenage, maybe early 20s, and it was just, "That's my daddy's car. That's my daddy's car. Why'd y'all kill my daddy?" And she was just distraught. I mean, it was guttural. It was raw, and she was running through the crowd, and you know, she got retained by people in the crowd because she was approaching the police line. And I had heard the community's response before that, asking why it's happened. You know, how do you stop this? Like, was there no other way? And the sound of that voice, I thought about my daughters and that I would be going home late. I knew that my daughter would be asking why I was late and what happened. I stayed because the questions needed to be answered. And I felt like that night that if there was a role that I could play, it was in making sure that the community wasn't shoo-shooed away to say, hey, yeah, it's tough, you know, deal with it later. And to make the government, i.e. the police, or who we wanted more representatives to answer these questions, that they couldn't deny that the questions were being asked and information wasn't being demanded. So I stayed, and I woke up the next day, you know, after my phone died that night and my image was all over the world. I turned my phone on and people that I hadn't talked to in a decade almost were like, you know, Braxton, you have to go back out there. You were showing us things that other people weren't showing us. You were saying things that needed to be said that other people weren't saying.
Was there ever a moment when you were afraid that emotion would take over?
Not out there, no. I've been trained as, you know, in leadership positions. You know, I'm an athlete, and I was an athlete at one point in time. Very impactful in my life, the idea to stay calm. But to be completely honest, David, I didn't worry about that out there because I was a mess once I got out.
In what way?
You know, as soon as I got in the car and got home safe nights. I was a complete mess. I couldn't have a conversation without breaking down and crying. I mean, the pain, physical pain that I endured. I saw somebody die. It was very challenging to my family, to me to tell them that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but I had to go. The what my community was facing, their feelings, you know, when you're going through that, when you're challenging power structures, that doesn't always turn out well. You know, honestly, in the context of being a black man.
Would you do anything different?
No. I think I was put where I was when I was for a reason.
So after the protests, you were among a group of people. I think there were eight of you that filed suit against the police. And what was your complaint? And that was eventually dropped. What happened with that one?
Well, it was eventually dropped. We wanted to get an injunction to prevent a CMPD from using certain violent tactics and weapons against nonviolent protesters. When we filed that suit, and since then, we haven't experienced any of those tactics being used.
How have you changed over the past year?
I mean, my life has changed. My life has changed dramatically. Like I said, there was a sense of citizen reportage, a bit of social activism. I've been given the responsibility and privilege to amplify the voices of others who don't have the same platform as I do. But I'm a student of anthropology, of culture. And while I do believe in the importance of going out and touching and dealing block to block and organization to organization, I know that we're a culture of laws and policies, and widespread institutional systemic change needs to get done through that. So I've focused on trying to be part of the political conversations to really affect the change. Again, that's part of my ability. I do really believe in the democratic process. I do believe in this idea, this great experiment. But I'm also aware of the truths of where we come from and who we are.
Let me ask you about that. Why did you decide to run for city council?
Because I believe that the systemic institutional changes do need to happen at the legislative level. And as it would have been much more convenient for me to support other people in doing that had somebody stepped up. But the way I saw it playing out, there was nobody that was stepping up and speaking and acting in a way that I felt needed to be done on a consistent basis in our municipal government. So it was a bit of, if not me, then who? If not now, then when? I've been invited to a lot of tables over the past year, and I've had the same conversations that we were having out on the street. And honestly, and the tables in the rooms that I've been in, people are willing to be part of the conversation. And some people are confused about how to do that, and they've been depending on me, you know, for at least to help them think about and act on it. So I've been able to build some bridges that haven't been there in certain places.
That sounds hopeful. I guess I should ask you, how has the city changed or not changed?
Conversations have been greatly impacted. I'm a big believer in the Opportunity Task Force report. And what they say is that we're not going to fix anything, the inequities that exist in our system, the segregation and everything that comes from that, by a new program. We need big ideas. And that's not going to happen in a year.
Do you think Charlotte is waking up to this?
I've been part of a lot of conversations, and this is what these conversations have been surrounded by. And if you're in those rooms and you're in those conversations, you say yes. But if you're the person that either doesn't have the time or effort or energy to be there, then you're going to say that nothing has changed.
That's David Borax from WFAE talking with Braxton Winston, protester turned political candidate in the year since the Keith Scott shooting.